Stanley Turrentine on tenor sax, leading his band, including Bob James on piano, who also is the arranger of this tune, Eric Gale on guitar, Ron Carter on bass, and Idris Muhammad on drums. This is titled Too Blue, and it comes from his 1973 album, Don't Mess with Mr. T. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it is Free Your Mind Friday. It is where we gather to kind of hear each other's points of view about anything that you choose to present to us for consideration. There's no theme, there's no topic, not on Free Your Mind Fridays. That's up to you. So where will you be taking us today as you free your mind? 888-874-4888 is a number to call. And let's not go into all these, you know, the winding roads. Just get straight to the point. So we are going to be with you every step of the way. What is it that you have on your mind today that you would like to share with others? See how we react. And this is how we form community. We talk about things that are scripted during the week, the rest of the week. This is a day that we are able to, from your point of view, speak to your particular interest. And keep in mind that you wanted to present something. You don't want it to be a soapbox now and get up there and just say things and then cut out. We want you to engage people listening. They may have a question or two, but don't just cut out. That is not a conversation. We're still interested in conversation, so try to present your points of view in such a way that people might react and ask you a question or two. All right, 888-874-4888. That's the number to call to free your mind. Who's up first? It looks like Harvey from Berkeley.
Hello, wonderful Eutrice.
Hey, Harvey. What's going on?
Well, I have an idea to bring our country together in a meaningful way and at the same time save our taxpayers a lot of money. And you know, when a baby is born, it needs to be held or it becomes very unhealthy. Or when couples are fighting, the first thing you'll hear is, don't touch me. And once the issue has been resolved, hugging is restored. And the Bible mentions that Jesus practiced the laying on of hands to heal people. So because politicians seem so perpetually angry and upset as a group, my new idea would help to change the situation in a very positive way. And so my idea is that before every session of both the House, United States Senate, as well as the House of Representatives, that there'd be a new rule that the first 15 minutes of each session be devoted to neck and shoulder rubs. And if, for example, on Monday, the Democrats...
I'm envisioning it.
Yeah, and so on Monday, the Democrats, for instance, would in the U.S. Senate, would go over to the Republican side of the House and give the Republicans a nice neck and shoulder massage. And then the next working day, the Republicans go over to the Democrat side of the House and give the Democrats legislatures a full 15-minute neck and shoulder rub before the work session starts. And the Senate security guards would monitor the neck and shoulder massage sessions to make sure that everything's on the up and up. And I believe that this would be, I think this would be a great way for us to spend our tax dollars. And also it would help the legislatures connect, and maybe there'd be less money spent on the military industrial complex if people were more back in touch. And personally, I practice this at my local coffee house. I share neck and shoulder rubs with friends, fully clothed, sitting in chairs in a safe public environment. And as far as I'm concerned, it's death or destruction or friendly neck and shoulder rubs, and the choice is ours.
Well, from your lips to God's ears, as they say, that this would happen. But, you know, it's a good thought. Thanks for putting it out in the ether. We'll see how people pick up on it.
Let's stay in touch. Thanks a lot.
Good fun. Chicago, Henry, you're on the...
Hey, Trees, how's it going?
Okay, what's going on with you?
All right, I just wanted to wish you and the PRN and Lead Stories listeners the best productive weekend that we all can have. Two things
Thank
quickly.
You.
The first thing is yesterday the FOP, Fraternal Order of Police in this area, Kevin Graham, who is the head of the Fraternal Order of Police here in this area, he had a press conference. And at the press conference, it was a cadre of chief of police and superintendents in the Cook County area. Now, when you look at that video, not one of them was black. And what was even more striking was the superintendent of Chicago Police is a black man, and he was also absent. Now, this municipality of Cook County has several police districts, and many of them are run by black officers, and not one of them was at the podium. So you make a guess on what that was about. But I also wanted to share something personally, kind of a personal accomplishment. And it also goes to, I think, Dutrice, you mentioned this in regards to protests. Back in January, I had my yearly checkup. And when I got on the scale, it was the heaviest I ever weighed in my life. And I also do my blood work. My doctor told me that my cholesterol level was high and my hemoglobin level was at levels that were close to pre-diabetes level. So that kind of concerned me a little bit. So what I thought about doing at first was changing up my diet a little bit. And what I did was I stopped eating. I took out white sugar out of my diet or processed sugar. Then, mentioned this on this show before. I'm a practicing Catholic. With Lent coming up, I also said, well, let me change my diet up, you know, for Lent and go to a plant-based diet. So I went to a plant-based diet starting for Lent. And I will say this. We're going into week four right now. I have lost 13 pounds. And this is without not 1 ounce of exercise, just eating plant-based foods for 4 weeks. I lost 13 pounds, and I feel better. I feel like I'm healthier, and like I said, I think when you were talking about your testimony of, you know, battling cancer, which I still think is very amazing on what you're doing. You talk about how the best protest is just being healthy because the system wants to basically kill us, not directly, but very much indirectly because, you know, cutting out a lot of foods that I typically eat, even like the fast food restaurant, it's like, you know, you put so much unhealthy stuff in your body. I never even noticed it, you know. And so with this, I've declared myself of, you know, maybe not practicing this full time even after Lent, but even during the weekday, I was going to go just eat plant-based food because I just feel like this is the way to go for me right now. And it does wonders for you when you change your diet up. So people who want to lose weight, just watch what you eat, and it really helps. Like I said, not 1 ounce of exercise for me. I lost 13 pounds in 4 weeks.
But you do have to get out there and walk at least a couple of blocks. get your body back in gear. It helps.
Oh,
it
yeah.
really does.
Yeah.
I'm very proud of you for, I mean, not just thinking about it, but doing something about it. So that's great. And that's an achievement. So all you have to do now is be consistent. Put a little bit of exercise in and continue watching what you're eating. And how is your temperament?
Well, you know what? It's so funny. My temperament has been a lot better now. I've been able to handle a lot of things. And one of the reasons why I'm not exercising is my schedule has been so busy. Like I said, this is like, you know, lunchtime is probably like my only free time right now. But, you know, handling a lot of things, I've been better at, you know, handling stress and handling, you know, and juggling my workload as well. So my temperament actually has been a lot better. I've been waking up in the morning and not feeling sluggish, you know, like I normally do. Oh, and another thing, too, I have also increased my water intake. I was drinking water, but, you know, I wasn't drinking enough water. So I've been consistently doing that as well, which makes a huge difference.
Well, good for you. So what's your goal, if you have any?
Well, like I said, I think I'm going to, even after Lynn is over, I think I'm going to do this on the weekday, just eat on the weekday. Because, you know, I know summer's coming around. I'm going to be invited to a lot of things with a lot of foods. And I'm going to try to practice this, you know, for the weekday. Maybe on the weekend I might have, you know, pasta salad or something like that. But other than that, you know, I think I'm going to make this a practice at least most of the week for me.
Well, I, for one, I'm very proud of you. Because you took the initiative, you don't feel penalized. It doesn't sound like you feel penalized in any way. You're coping, and you're losing weight, and you know you can see yourself graduating to another level. That's great. That's fantastic. So congratulations.
Thank you. And like I said, I think I took the step. And like you said, this is the. You know, watching your health is the greatest protest you can do.
It is. It really is. It is the best way to respond to a system hell-bent on doing us in, you know, try and be healthy.
Exactly.
Thanks, Henry. Good to hear from you.
From All right,
thank
New
you. York, it's Jay at 888-874-4888. Hello, Jay.
Latrice, how are you?
Okay, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Listen, basically, I just wanted to ask your opinion. At what point in time do you think the American people are going to get sick and tired of Donald Trump's constant lying? I mean, it's like the man has an absolute sickness. He cannot say anything, it seems, that deals with reality and truth. I mean, talking about his own father, talking about just basically anything, then you don't know if he's joking or not when he was talking about windmills. I mean, it just becomes kind of annoying to constantly have to listen to someone that is supposed to be the head of the free world, make a complete a-hole out of himself. You know, and then there's this whole thing with now Mexico's and the lies in regards to migration from Mexico and other Latino countries.
We just can't keep up with the lies, that's for sure. But you know, I have to ask you.
We weighed you down. You know what I mean? Because when you try to have a conversation with someone in regards to his actions and behavior, and at any point in time they agree with his behavior, you just become so turned off and you don't want to continue the dialogue with the person.
Yes, because I mean, you are in a world of reality, and he is not. And although it is so blatantly clear, and more people are saying it, there is something very wrong, deeply wrong with this president.
But it's like the people don't, you please. It's like the people
can't do anything. What are the people going to do? What will the people do with a president who is an inveterate liar? What is to be done? How could you fix that?
It seems the only way to fix it is hopefully they'll remove him in the next year and a half. But the more you look at it and the more you observe it, it doesn't seem like it's going to happen. It's like the people.
But there are other things that they could do. I think it should concern every citizen that we have been witnessing now for 2 years, and in some cases even more than that, because people have been exposed to Donald Trump in other spheres. We've been witnessing extremely disturbing behavior on the part of this president. The people who should be on top of this, the people who should be doing something about this, appear not to want to do anything. We've had psychiatrists, an organization of psychiatrists, issue a paper. We have had all kinds of clinicians express concern about the president's behavior and his attitude. And, you know, it's becoming more and more bizarre. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing for the nation. We're seeing people in the armed forces at the highest levels having concern about this president, except that, you know, he is their boss. But what do we do? Why is it that we are not going any further than being upset about it and finding it embarrassing to the country? What realistically are we expecting people who can change things to do? Psychiatrists have issued a report. Short of having people with the white coats show up at the White House and carting him off to some institution and beginning the process of diagnosis here, I don't know what we are expecting. From whom are we expecting leadership on this point?
Well, Eutrice, I'll just leave it with this. Hopefully, at some point in time, they'll be able to, in this country, wake up the masses and get rid of him, and we as a people move forward. But my fear is that by the time he's out of office, the damage that he will be able to have done may be never turned around in this country. It's like he's the devil. That's all I could say. Have a good weekend, and a good weekend to the PRN family.
Thank you. Thanks so much. This is a dilemma. I mean, we just saw CNN do a big thing on it, saying something is very wrong with the president. I mean, how many clarion calls should there be before something is done? Why is it that there seems to be a shared opinion that nothing can be done? We just have to wait it out. I mean, is that the only response to a major crisis as the people see it? There's a crisis with this president. His conduct is also noticed on the international level, where he's dealing with other heads of state, and they are very troubled by the president's conduct. This is, we've never seen this before. But that doesn't mean that there can't be a response. There should be a response, and it should come before the next election. We're already 2 years plus down the road, you know. I don't see why this has not constituted a major discussion in Congress as to what is to be done with a president that is exhibiting very disturbing traits, very disturbing behaviors, and yet things are going on. It's not just the lying, it's the deceitfulness, the disrespect, open disrespect and disregard for people, and all these things. What do we do as a country? I don't know. I don't know anymore. I thought we had an answer, and the answer was to discuss it openly and to get a sense from the people as to what they are feeling about this president and his behavior. And it's not just him. It's his whole family just exhibiting disturbing patterns of behavior. It's his inner circle. Showing the same disturbing patterns of behavior. So it means that this president is at the epicenter of a wide pattern of behavior. We haven't seen consistent corruption to this level in a long time. The attitude that they don't care, and the attitude that they do not fear the people. They can do whatever they want, and they are doing whatever they want. The government has become one big piggy bank for them and their friends. They are coming up with all kinds of crazy schemes involving lots and lots of money. I mean, we just had recently Ivanka Trump coming up with some new project. And I don't know how she gets to launch this new project as a senior advisor to the president, promoting women all over the world. And she will get $50 million to start this project. I mean, how did this come to be? What rules allowed her to do that? You know, it's the same kind of pattern that we saw with the Clintons. You come up with an idea, and you're using government money and other people's money to make money for yourself. I'm so disgusted with this administration. I'm beyond being outraged and ashamed of it. I just have dismissed it from my mind, but then you can't, because everything somehow involves them. Let's take this break and come back to your thoughts right after this at 888-874-4888. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it's Free Your Mind Friday. It's an open forum. It happens to be the best open forum on the planet, if I dare say so myself. But it gives us a chance to build community by sharing thoughts and opinions and information and ideas. and you write the script. We have no script, in fact. You tell us what is on your mind and why it's on your mind, and give us an idea of what it is you're thinking and how you're thinking. It's one of the best ways to get to know each other and to share this idea that we are a community, after all. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. And I would like to see people, especially who we have not heard yet from before. So anyway, call and let's hear what you're thinking. What's on your mind? I was noting, you know, when we talked about this business of health, I was noting to myself, when Henry was talking about what he's doing, what he didn't say, and I was happy he didn't feel the need to say it, was that it was a struggle. It was a struggle for him to change his health habits, his eating habits. And, you know, he had to wrestle with it and fight with it. This is one of the ways in which, in fact, people are discouraged from doing the right thing. You know, a small change. Look at that. 13 pounds in a short time just from making a small change and not under duress or not under pressure, but just because you arrive at a point that this is a good thing I need to do for myself. So that's the attitude that we want. You're making a change, and you're happy that you're making a change, and you will see the result. Jose from New York, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, Utrecht. Thank you for your show.
Thank you.
I want to speak about him with about Martin Luther King yesterday, his comment.
Okay.
When he was referring to, let's say, the money aspect of making change. Yes, they gave us symbolism to show that racism had stopped or it doesn't exist anymore. But the symbolism did not cost, like you said, any monetary, it didn't have that much monetary value. So you could eat at the same restaurant as whites. You could consume just like the white person did. But you're being a consumer. It's not like you're getting anything in return for what was taken from you. So to be able to get monetary value, it has to be a long game. And it has to be a commitment. It has to be a whole group. It doesn't have to be just one Saturday a month meeting or every 6 months. It has to be a strategy to put them somewhere in a corner that they have to pay attention to it and be able to make true reparations and have them see the value in a way that they have to. There's no other way that they can answer the question but by actually having true reparations for the community.
Could you expand a bit on that? Because I think that you haven't shared enough information for us to make sense of your argument, although I'm sure you have a very powerful argument. So stretch out a little bit and tell us a little bit more.
Okay, well, if you want to get in business, if you want to get money from anyone or myself, if you want to get money from someone, you need to make them see the value. And you need to have them in a position that they have no other choice but to have to give you that money to be able to make
now,
up.
Now, you're referring to the government seeing the value or the people seeing the value? Which one?
Well, the politicians in the government. Mm-hmm. So that they have to go and sell it to their constituents that believe that there is no racism, that there is no value in reparations. They don't understand or see why that could happen.
So how do, if the governmental officials are not communicating this message, how do we get this message?
It has to be strategized. I'm not saying I have all the answers, but it has to be a long strategy and keep the pressure on it and figure out how to make them see the truth. Not that they could just wave it off by a simple answer. They have to actually have concrete facts to show them and prove to them that this is necessary. And these are the reasons why. And it has to be a community effort, like you're saying.
It's necessary that they see it that way. Why is it necessary that governmental officials, the ones who would presumably be voting on such a measure, why do they need to be converted?
They have the decision. They can make the decision as to yes or no to have the proposition move forward. So they have the decision power. They need to make the decision, and the decision needs to be shown to them as to why they need to make it in that way.
Personally, where do you see this whole argument and this whole fight, if it develops into a fight? So far, it hasn't developed into a fight. But
right,
where do you see it going?
Well, if there is no community effort, it's not going anywhere, because, like, there were 20 acres in a mule. That was going to cost money. They didn't even go through with that. But to be able to have you consume with the white patrons, that wasn't an issue. To share a bathroom, that wasn't an issue. That's all symbolism, let's say, in a way. Yes, it's progress. I'm not saying that it isn't. But at the same time, it wasn't what the, let's say, the reparation should have been. 20 acres and a mule would have been a significant reparation for all these families to be able to build and start from there.
I see your point. And thanks for contributing today. Good to hear from you, Jose. James from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hello, you two. Good afternoon.
Hello.
To you and you
yourself. Thank you.
What's been on my mind is the point that looking at the Trump cabinet, and no one really looks at Benjamin Carson. Ben Carson is the housing secretary. Plus, he's a doctor.
He's a surgeon.
Maybe he's still a doctor, though, right? So you got to deal with the mental.
It's a different level. He's a brain surgeon, a neurosurgeon.
Right, so he's a specialist. That's what the president needs. You need a brain surgeon.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
So I will conclude at this point. Oh, wait a minute. One other thing. With the winning of the Chicago mayorship, I have a problem in Mrs. Lightfoot and those of her ilk.
You're talking about gay women?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, why are you covering it up and dancing around it? You have a problem with it. What is the problem with it? When you say people of her ilk.
The problem is, they're trying to push this whole gay thing. If you look at, New York, started with Christine Quinn and others, and there's like a solid spot for the gays. Then Trish James, what is it? What is it that are we going to have a sweep of nobody but the gays?
Let me ask you this question. You have to stop for a minute and think of what it is you're actually communicating. You're openly communicating that you have a problem with gays. And then you say things like, they're pushing this. Who are the they who are pushing it? The gay agenda. We've heard all these different things before.
When Messi came out and said he was part of the Rainbow Coalition, and they had subsequently pushed the thing of gayness all throughout the world, right? So when we look at these persons, how does a gay person get born? Do they?
But you're saying you're in a tight spot here with respect to your argument, and I'll ask you the same thing. People would say the same thing about blacks or Latinos. Why are you pushing the black agenda, pushing the Latino agenda? It is simply a matter that people belong to different constituencies, and they become involved in advancing their interests, like any other community. People who are left-handed, there's an organization pushing the agenda of left-handed people. People who are short.
Don't we all get here on this planet through male and female?
You're way off target. Let's deal with the issue. We're all on this earth together. And people have different backgrounds, people have different orientations, people have different interests. And in some cases, they feel safe enough that the society, as a society, is considering them in all matters relating to the law and social norms and mores. Okay, so they're good. But then there are people who have had a historical issue of disfranchisement. And we just talked about it. Who called before you? Jose talked about, you know, the 40 acres and a mule. That was a constituency. Yeah. People who went through enslavement got nothing for it. They have a vested interest in advancing their argument and their cause, don't you think?
Well, this...
answer the question. Don't you think the people
Republic,
who feel that they have been denied, who feel they have been...
But we live under martial law. We live under martial law.
No, we don't live under martial law.
Why don't we? Point that out to me.
No, but you're taking the argument all over the place. We do not live under martial law. You would know if you lived under martial law.
Yes, you do. Yes, we do.
All right.
I'm going to tell you like there are people that call themselves police officers, right? A law enforcement officer.
No. I have to do this because I'm a stickler for sticking to the point. And you called in and you raised the issue about these people as if they were separate and apart from any other people, and that they have no right to struggle you resent the idea that they are struggling for their freedoms and their interests the way any other constituency would.
The creator or the creator. All right? So you're telling me that the creator didn't know all.
I'm not arguing about the creator. This is not a discussion about the creator. This is a discussion about you expressing explicitly some difficulty accepting certain people as being entitled to rights and recognition. And I'm asking
where
you
does
why.
Where does it say that in the Constitution? Where does it say in the United States Constitution that the word con is against? And people who believe in the Constitution, they tell you that one person, one vote.
Con
but then when
is
it comes
not,
down to...
But, you know, you're mixing up 400 different arguments and you're not advancing. The word Constitution doesn't come from con, meaning against.
What does it mean?
Well, look it up. It's a Latin verb. It's a Latin word.
Yeah, the prefix, right? The prefix.
It's not a prefix. No, it's not a prefix.
Yeah. Okay.
It is part of a whole word.
And the prefix of the word begins with C-O-N.
Yeah, no, but it is not a prefix. A con job.
We're getting con job.
No, you all over the place. And you're making up arguments that are not linked to each other. They're not reinforcing your point. And in the end, even now, you still don't know what you're arguing. You still don't know what your argument is. Do you know what you're arguing? Do you know what your point, your central point is? Oh, I think James left us? Okay. See, this is the thing. You have a point of view. That's great. It may not be, as some people would see it, it may not be a logical point of view, but that's where you get into a discussion. But you're jumping all over the place, and everywhere you go, you're making arguments that simply don't make sense. They don't make sense. And when I ask, I've heard people on the program before coming obliquely and sometimes directly with a homophobic argument. We have to take it on as it is. It's a homophobic argument. And it's not a good homophobic argument. You're arguing that homophobia has basically caused a deterioration. I mean, homosexuality has caused a deterioration in society. You can't prove it. It's what you are thinking, okay. But when you make arguments like these that then go on to form the basis of a wide-ranging point of view that you would like others to uphold, you got to come with the facts, come with the numbers. You can't just argue what you think and what you're feeling, not at that level. And especially because you're African American, you ought to appreciate that kind of approach to a discussion. There's room for a lot of discussion, and that's the whole point of the gay community and the African American and Latino people of color generally. They've been discussing this question even within their own community, how they are marginalized. So it's not only the issue of sexual orientation, it's also an argument they're having within their community about how racism has essentially overridden their specific and unique concerns within the community. And we need to understand that. You know, people jump on this thing of, you know, how the gays have basically messed up the society. I say, okay, if that's your point of view, now prove it. And then they can't. What they have are feelings that they wish to justify. As a result, I imagine, from the leftover influence of organized religion. But what have we been seeing? We've been seeing that there is a struggle, a very serious struggle within the gay community for recognition and respect for people of color within the gay community itself. So it is not as easy as you paint it. And it's not as simplistic as you paint it. It's a very complex issue. And don't underestimate it. Luis from New Jersey, you're on the air. Hello, Luis.
Yes. Good evening, Patrice.
Hi.
I've been a long time listener, even when you was on that other station back in the 80s and therefore. What I'm calling about is I haven't heard our warrior lawyer, Alton Maddox, on your show anymore, and was just kind of wondering if, there was a reason for that.
Yes. For one thing, organizationally, the United African Movement is going through some changes, and they're all good, but it takes a while for things to settle down. And as you know, he has lost his life partner, Leola, who died. Yes. And I don't think, it's my personal observation, I don't think he has yet fully recovered from that.
Yes.
He has taken on a lot of work. He's overworked. And everybody I know who knows him, they're concerned that he just needs to take some rest. This was the eternal demand of the organization, even when Leola was alive. She worked like a team of horses to just keep the organization together and to get done the things that needed to be done. Alton, I think, I don't want to get too personal about it, but I think it is very difficult for him to accept that he really does need to slow down and he really does need to rest and he really does need to take his health into consideration and as a number one priority. He is overworked. His body is responding. His body is actually shutting down because he just can't keep that pace every day for any more years. He needs that. But then this is a dilemma within many black organizations. It's the same people doing the work all the time.
Yes.
And after a while, if people aren't delegated and if people don't step up to the responsibility of keeping any organization going, it becomes a major burden to the leader of the organization.
Yes.
And people would happily step aside and not do anything if they see the leaders of the organization are doing the work. And that has, in my view, it has compromised him seriously health-wise. I myself had arranged. I had a conference with him. I went to New York and talked with him and even arranged and got absolute willingness.
Yes.
Of medical professionals to help, he wouldn't do it.
Oh, no. Yes.
So he is a man. He's always been like that. He is not easy to convince to step aside for a little while and take care of himself. And then this, as I said, Leola's death was a crushing blow, a crushing blow. So it's a matter of giving him the space and giving other people the chance and opportunity to intervene and to convince him, to help him understand that he will have to get used to the idea that some other people would take over for a while, and he should be healing. He should be taking care of his body so he could last longer. He is a fierce warrior. I don't think there's any, I've said it often enough, I don't know another lawyer as fierce as he is in the courtroom. I just don't know one.
That's right.
And I really do hope that he takes this bit of advice. Just to take it easy for a while and concentrate on reconstituting himself.
Yes.
And that is why. That's the long answer to the short question you asked.
Yes. Well, hopefully if he's listening, a lot of people call in, and even some people, I won't say it that way. A lot of people, I don't hear anyone calling in and asking about him, and I just want him to know, if he's listening, that there are people out here, as yourself and others, that, we're concerned and interested in his well-being.
Absolutely.
Yes, go ahead.
I miss him greatly on air, but I don't want to push it because I know how precarious the situation is.
Yeah.
And hopefully with a little bit of support and people understanding, it would give him time to mend, not just physically, but psychologically, as I said.
Yes.
He is still mourning, and of course, with
right.
almost original force, he's still mourning the loss of his wife.
Yes.
Very deep. And but he is still dedicated, and I know Alton, and
yes.
I know the way he goes about things. He's all in. He's all in.
Yes.
1,000%.
Absolutely.
He's all in.
Always.
And but the time certainly has come for him to be relieved, and this is the other dilemma. Is there someone to replace him?
Mm-hmm.
This is an organizational question.
Yes.
What does he wish, to happen? Yeah. But then sometimes you have to fight him against,
yes.
What he wants to do, because it is going to be so taxing on his system.
Yeah.
I mean, if you know him, and I'm getting a sense that you do.
Oh, yes.
He is always 100% involved.
Yes.
And that means sometimes no sleep. It means no rest. He's doing 400 things all at the same time.
Yes.
It is the problem we have as a whole, right across the board, in small organizations, and especially small black organizations.
Yes.
Where there's only so much that you can look to the membership to do, because in the areas of specialty that are needed to defend a community, there are just about a handful of people who can do it, and sometimes just one. So it becomes a matter of being overwhelmed with the problems. And he's one person, he doesn't even think about it. This to him is no big deal.
That's
but,
right.
We want to be able to support his health and his mending.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Sister Eutrice.
Thank you. Thanks for your call. And that almost brings us to the end of our program today. But I like the idea. We don't have to agree. That's okay. That's okay. We just have to struggle to see each other's point of view. We don't have to agree. Because even when we disagree, there's validity somewhere in what the other person is saying. But we have to train ourselves to listen hard enough to what they're saying. And then we also have to struggle with ourselves, because we've been holding on to ideas and opinions for a long, long time that we are either unwilling or unafraid to inspect a little more closely for fear that we may discover, well, we weren't especially insightful when we thought this. But now we can see another point of view. And again, you don't have to agree with it. That's the whole point. But you should open your mind enough to appreciate the other person's vantage point, the other person's point of view. That's the excitement of building a community like this on air, where we can trade information, opinions, and ideas. Thank you so much for calling in and contributing, including with a sense of humor. Always have a sense of humor. Surround yourselves with people who mean you well and who bring good energy to you, as you do to them over the weekend. And we'll see each other Monday, and we fight some more. Bye-bye.